All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Don Selesky. You're watching Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Rigorelia?
Doing all right?
Yeah, just happy to see you.
It's been a minute.
It's been a week or so.
Looking pretty fresh.
Since we were in Boston together.
Yeah.
One of our good friends from fans of Philly. We had a good trip.
Yeah.
See our buddy Reamer get celebrated for his 1,000th game, which we already talked about. But it was cool to be there to watch the ceremony and see Jimmy Montgomery and a few of the guys and some of our guys as well after the game. We got to talk to the boys for a few minutes. Tough game. They fought.
Yeah, they fought.
They fought back, man. God, they never quit. They never quit. Mm-hmm. But good trip.
Yeah, it was.
I got to see you for one day anyway.
Oh, you know. Celebrating 42.
Celebrating. You know, God, you're older than me now.
I know.
Because I had to celebrate on Monday.
Wait
until
you're 42.
I can't wait.
You won't even know.
I won't know.
What to do with yourself.
I forgot about that
one. Yeah.
It's been so long ago. I forgot about it. But good to see you, buddy. Glad you can make it. Debo and Ball have been sitting here all day waiting on you, and you finally got here.
Yeah, I was recovering from my pickleball game yesterday.
With Homer. Did he hit himself in the face again? Or
he did not. No.
I saw him. You know,
he's pretty, pretty contained. Pretty.
Was he?
Oh, yeah.
Did he get mad? He must have won then.
I think he wanted to get mad. We were on a team, actually, together.
Oh, he wanted to get games. Mad?
Well, I had some horrible shots. Well, my second time playing, so.
Right.
Had a couple bad shots where I'm like, I could just, like.
He can't understand that.
No, he can't understand that. I could just see, like, him being upset with me and the bad shot. But he's like, let's try Rouse.
Well, after you told me about him hitting himself and his, you know, the bandage, I saw him at the game, like, a day later, and I still
cut on his nose.
And I'm like. I was like, how'd you do that? He goes, oh, I hit myself. You know, and I said, I know, Riles told me.
Yeah.
But
it's a lot of fun now. So we got to get you out there.
I'm ready. I played tennis my whole life.
I
want to play, though. I
you're
really
quick and
do.
Limber.
Yeah, I think so.
I think
get the hips.
Yeah, up, but, you got to open those things
we
up.
We didn't have a game last weekend. We had a bye week. you finally were like, hey, what time's the game?
I know.
Oh,
I
was ready to rock. You already knew we had a buy.
No, I didn't.
You saw the group text. Packs, pack. Which one? You don't have any gear. Skates, nothing. Anyway, good to see you, buddy.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
Oh, yeah.
Flyboys, Baller was saying, ESPN was saying in the next seven, they weren't going to win one. They want to. Well,
what does ESPN know?
I don't know. They obviously didn't get that right.
They got hockey, like 7/8 sport on their docket.
That's unfortunately the way of the world.
I know. So but they really don't have the scoops.
They don't. We do. They don't. We got to get on Kobe going about that because he works for them a little bit.
That's right.
But they went 2-3-2 in those games. And, you know, we were at the Boston. They lost to the Bruins. They lost to Florida. They lost to the Maple Leafs. But then they turned around and beat the Bruins and the Maple Leafs. And overtime losses against Carolina. And last night's game was unbelievable against New York.
Yeah,
man. Talk what an a effort. Bit about that. What an effort. I mean, you look like they look like they're out of it. And they just kept coming back scoring goals. It's fun to watch. It's tough to lose that game. But at the same time, you get a point, and they deserve probably better. I mean, both – obviously, the Rangers are a really good team, but what a game. Just kept clawing and fighting. And if they can get themselves into this playoffs, man, like I wouldn't want to play them. I'll tell you that.
I know. They're relentless.
Relentless.
And you're in a dogfight, so I can't imagine any team wants to play the Flyers.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't just because they believe they can win every game. Right? You know, it's the way it is. But while we were not together – Sean Couturier, who's just recently named captain, was scratched two games in a row, which wanted to get your thoughts on. I know I just felt like I was a little extreme, even if he hadn't played well or scored a goal in so long. I just think he's the captain. He's a pretty valuable guy. We've talked about him a lot. And, you know, Torts is right to do that as a coach.
He is.
It feels like he's pushing the right buttons. They did get 3 out of 4 points, but I don't know. I just, you know, he's not a kid. He's a leader. He's your captain. He's played a long time. He's the whole time he's played. He's been here, obviously, as a Flyer. But, you know, could look at it on both sides of the coin, I guess. You know, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I see it both ways. I mean, he has every right to not play, I'm right, based on productivity. And just interesting timing, you know, just being named the captain.
Yeah.
I understand he was in a pointless drought there, and he probably wasn't playing up to his expectations. So, you know, naturally as a coach, like you're trying to push buttons and get the guys rocking. I guess maybe I struggle a little bit with the lack of communication with your captain. You know,
right.
It didn't sound like there was much of it.
That's the way it sounded, yeah.
So maybe, you know, from that perspective, I think, again, he's your captain. So I think that relationship needs to be solid,
right?
You know, to me, that would probably be the only issue I have if there's any truth to that lack of communication,
right,
or whatnot. But Torts is notorious for, you know, for scratching whoever's not playing.
Well,
it don't matter who you are, so
it's
like it's consistent, and the guys know, and message received. Mm-hmm. I think for Coots, it's just responding to it and you know, accepting that he needs to play better. I think that's just the nature of the beast, right? I mean,
yeah,
but I think it's just like it's a fine line, you know. You not that you're gonna lose him, but like,
right,
you
he's
careful,
a pro,
like,
he's
he's a pro, he's got his head screwed on in the right way. But I just think that there's just a way to maybe scratch your older veteran players versus like a rookie, where you can maybe send the assistant coach over and say, you're not playing tonight, and, you know, just get a practice in, you know, get a little work in and you're good to go, you know, thing. There's a little bit more explanation that needs to be laid out there. But other than that, I don't have a problem with it. You know, it's part of the game, and doesn't matter who you are, you know.
I just felt like him being the captain, him being as important as he is, and maybe he hasn't been at the top of his game. We also do have to take in consideration he hasn't played 2 years.
Right.
But, you know, Sean Coots isn't going to make excuses.
No.
He had been on a bit of a scoring drought, but it happens to everyone. But I just thought it was a little extreme, in my opinion. I do like the way Torts has these guys playing every night and all that, but I thought it was a little extreme.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah. And then the other thing I'll say is, you know, you're in the limelight, you got media, and I think there maybe needs to be a little more explanation.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah. You know, like, it's your captain, and he's been a captain for what, like 30 days,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, or whatever it was. Maybe a little more insight to the public, right? I mean, I understand some things as an organization keep to your chest.
100%, yeah.
But maybe a little more transparency, because then all of a sudden you got, like, you know, people question, you know what I mean? And just like, you're making stories up, right?
It's right, like, right.
Is Torts and Coots good? This and that, like, you know what I mean? You start reaching, and yeah. I think that's where it gets a little fluffy. So maybe a little more transparency could have helped the situation, but
right.
I think it's water under the bridge now, and
yeah,
you know,
I hope so.
Message received, and you know, the show must go on.
Yeah,
you know,
for
so.
Sure. And you know, Coots, like he's on the quiet side as far as you know, just like he's not a loud, boisterous guy, and he doesn't want to make waves,
right?
And he just wants to play hockey.
That's it.
What he wants to do and win. And win. So mm-hmm. hopefully that's all, like you said, water under the bridge. And we march forward these last few games.
Yeah.
Try to sneak into these playoffs here or hold our spot
yep.
and get in. Some sad news.
Real sad.
Really sad news. Couple things. First, Chris Simon, big chief there. Man, I lucky enough to know him a little bit. Met him years and years ago. You know, Christ, when he was playing with Quebec
wow.
before they left. And always was just such a nice guy. And every year, you know, I'd see him shoot the shit with him. Unfortunately, you know, not with us anymore. And I know you had a scrap with Big Simes.
Mm-hmm.
Sad.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad. I mean, it don't matter who the person is.
Right.
Even in hockey or, right. you know, just the state of affairs that we're in. As a society, you know, the mental health crisis is real, and you know, obviously, Chris was struggling, and you know, you don't wish anything like that on your worst enemy,
no,
you know, and one of the toughest dudes to ever play, not even just tough, can play the game. You talk about a power forward, and
yeah.
You know, just gives the NHL a black eye. 52 years old. I mean, it was my second NHL fight.
Yeah,
you know, and. Yeah. A lot of respect for him, and grew up watching this guy, and you know, grew up not too far from where I was in Winnipeg there. It's a shame, and you know, I think this is really going to highlight this conversation around, you know, the CTE, and you know, maybe the NHL acknowledging the correlation between repeated head trauma and CTE. Mm-hmm. But I will say, you know, I think they need to own that, right? But beyond that, like just the substance, you know, substance abuse, and there's other stuff besides that, right? I mean, because we all know, like, life exists outside of hockey or fighting. Getting punched in the face, clearly not great for brain health, but I think a lot of these guys are dealing with more
it's
trauma
more than
that,
right?
That probably exasperates it, but you know, if you peel back the onion, you know, you probably got some childhood trauma, you know, you got some substance abuse that's probably burying the childhood trauma, and then you get the added element of fighting, you know, fighting
yeah.
legit heavyweights for how many years, obviously that's not great. And then adding more substance abuse on that, and, you know, it's just not a recipe for mental wellness.
Right.
Right? So I think the NHL as a whole, it could do a better job supporting their players. I think a great step in the right direction would be, I don't know how it looks legally for them to start owning that piece, right? I mean,
right.
I think the UFC and the boxing commissions have made the correlation between, or at least admitted the correlation between repeated head trauma and CTE, which can't be diagnosed until you're dead, from what I understand. So, like, right now the speculation is, oh, he's got CTE. We don't know that yet.
Right.
Right? But, I mean, there could be a lot of underlying issues there. But at the end of the day, it's tragic no matter how you look at it. It's a black eye for the NHL, you know. I think
yeah.
we could do better for our fellow brethren, you know, whatever that support system looks like, and help guys out a little more. I know
yeah.
it's not that easy because it's complicated.
Right.
Life's complicated, yep, right? Everyone's got personal issues.
Yep.
So it's not as cut and dry as what we make it seem sometimes. But, you know, wish his family the best
yeah.
and send out love
prayers
to friends and family. And hopefully we can, you know, do better in the future. And then, you know, on top of Cy, you know.
Yeah, Konstantin Koltsov, who was in the Penguins organization, actually played quite a few games with Pittsburgh over a three-year span, I think. Tragically ended his life. It's sad, man.
Yeah,
it's sad. We don't know what's going on there either, but it's just not good.
Yeah,
not sad. Good. Like you said, it doesn't matter who it is. Doesn't mean just because he played hockey, it's anyone that's going through those things, and it's sad.
Yeah, it's sad, and you know, to your point, there is like this is not a fighter issue, right? I mean, this guy wasn't a fighter,
right?
Yeah, Cy was obviously, but I think you know life is challenging, and you know people are feeling the squeeze. You know, it seems like everything's kind of dark right now, and you know, personal issues combined with you know some societal and political issues. Who knows what is the force at B here? But like, I think it's showing that this is more than just fighters. You know, this is the situation we're in is beyond that, but. Again, I'm not going to sit here and say that getting punched in the head for a living is great for your mental health, right? But it certainly attributes to probably some negative repercussions down the road. But I think this is just highlighting the larger problem here we're dealing with because the suicide rate through the roof, what I understand, is through the roof, from what I understand,
right,
and beyond what it was before. So we just need to do a better job supporting people outside, inside hockey culture. I mean, just supporting humans as they are, so... Wish all their families the best.
Yeah, I wish them the best. Both families.
Yeah.
On to some happier news. Mm-hmm. Our buddy TJ Oshie.
Yeah,
Oshie. Played his 1,000th game. I was messaging back and forth with him. Great guy, man.
Mm-hmm.
Great accomplishment.
Yeah.
You know, awesome.
No coincidence there. You know, 1,000 games, not easy to do.
No, it's not. So congrats, Oshie.
Yeah.
You're the man. Flyer signed a goalie.
Yeah.
They sure did. Alexei Kolosov. And Baller says this guy's legit. So when Baller goes out, you know, he's an insider. He's this guy knows
flying
stuff.
Flying to Russia, scouting him out, getting the inside scoop.
Baller
so
saw
back.
Him play last week and while we were, you know, busy. He went over and saw him, and he said this guy looks legit.
Yeah.
Debo confirmed.
Yeah.
Debo watched scoops. His dogs while he went. But not your brother's, isn't my bad. But anyway, you know, supposedly this guy's a good goaltender. We don't know what's going on in the future with you know, everything, but we'll see. Hopefully he is a good goalie.
Yeah, right.
Our boy, the Wayne Train.
Oh, man.
Sim Daddy.
Whew.
He's going to sign a one-day contract. Is he playing that game?
You put him in front of the
Throw
net.
Throw him in front of the
Why
net.
Not?
Torque power play.
Yeah, right.
You never know.
Right, right.
What if he went in there and buried one? He might sign him to another day.
I would have put money on if you put him out there for the 3-4 power plays to get that game.
He'd probably get one.
He'd get one.
He probably would.
A redirect or rebound or something. Just put him out there. We don't have to skate a whole lot.
Yeah,
just
right. Like, April 13th against the Devils. They're going to be doing the celebration.
Yeah.
And we're hoping to get Wayne in the house here in the stew.
Oh, man.
Before he's going to be here for about 4 days. So it's exciting. I'm so happy. He did say a little while back that he was going to be here. So, he was telling,
congrats.
Congratulations. What a career, man. What a guy. You talk about a guy born to be a Philadelphia Flyer, man. He was God. I've heard so many people say he was my favorite.
For sure. He should have never left, honestly.
I wish he had.
Even on his worst day, he's still a Flyer. I mean, I remember still fits in the lineup.
The former GM saying, well, we're not just going to trade him to trade him. Well, you kind of did.
Yeah.
Kind of traded him to trade him. But he was a Flyer, and he's going to retire a Flyer.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the man.
Big night.
Great guy.
April 13th.
Yep. Can't wait.
What else you got, Nass?
That's about it. It's almost that time
for
our guest.
151?
151, Debo?
151.
151 with the Big Bird.
Big Bird, Don Selesky.
Yes.
Let's go, Nass.
Let's go.
Before we jump into our interview with Don Selesky, a quick message from our good new friends at AG1. Nassie, you've given AG1 a try for some time now. What are your thoughts?
I'll tell you, I first gave AG1 a try because I was feeling a little sluggish midday, not as focused. I saw an ad, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give this a try. And honestly, since drinking AG1, I felt so much better, so much more energized, not losing focus, not getting the midday, you know, where I want to take a nap or anything like that. It really has made my health feel like so much better.
Oh, that's amazing. And you've been able to replace a good chunk of your synthetic multivitamins with AG1, supporting your gut health, the prebiotics, the probiotics, vitamin C, the zinc to support your immune health.
Yes.
How's that been going?
It's great. Every morning when I get up, I mix it, drink it, and I'm like ready to go for the day.
And I'm assuming you would recommend this to your friends and family based on your experience so far?
You're right, Riggs. If there's one product I would recommend to elevate your health or any of my friends, it's AG1. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/knuckles. Again, that's drinkag1.com/knuckles. Check it out.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Suttlemeyer. And this week we are thrilled to have a former member of back-to-back Stanley Cup champion, 73-74, 74-75. He played nearly 550 games in the NHL, including 82 playoff games. Played 9 years in the show, nearly six seasons in the Black and Orange. Please welcome Big Bird, Don Selesky. How are you, sir?
Great. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Thanks for taking the time to join us.
It's a pleasure.
It's awesome. I'm curious, before we really get into this, so in 69 you're drafted, right?
Yep.
That's when the Big Bird character was introduced. You're a tall man. You're a tall man. You had the locks, the curly locks. The name kind of fits. Who gave it to you?
Well, that's interesting that 69 was the year that that Big Bird came into existence. I had never put that together. But and I had short hair then, so you know,
it wasn't like
there was any locks. But the way that name came was like a lot of our names on the Flyers came. Everybody would always point back to Clarkie. Is that we were in warm-ups before a game one day, and the glass was real low, so people could lean over the glass and we'd communicate with them and talk to people. And there was a little kid looked down, and I was standing right next to the glass, and he says, "Hey, Mom, that guy looks like Big Bird." And Clarkie was standing there. He couldn't wait to get in the dressing room. He was like, "Hey, Big Bird!"
That's great. So,
and that was it. After that, everything was Big Bird. And Kinderchuk, then he got Oscar the Grouch because he's such a miserable prick. He's never happy. He's always grumpy. So Schultz, he got the Hammer after that. So,
oh man,
some good nicknames. Wow. Yeah, that's a good story.
That's awesome. Yeah, I wondered if it was Clarkie or something like that, but that's pretty good. That's pretty interesting how that came about.
And you know that's going to stick, eh? When Clarkie comes in and just throws it out there.
Yeah, when Clarkie delivers the message.
Clarkie was in that draft as well, and Hammer, right? In the Hammer, 69, I think.
Clark, the Hammer. The guy that was the number one draft choice was a guy named Woody Currier, who was only played in the minors. He played a couple games with the Flyers, and I think he was a cop in Cornwall, Ontario afterwards when he retired. But there was Willie Brossard, played for the Flyers some in Toronto. We had a couple other guys. There was like six or seven guys that wound up playing in the National League.
Good draft.
How do you find, like, so how, did you go to the draft or how was it?
No.
And it's a lot different, obviously.
You know what? I'll never forget that because we'd gone to the Memorial Cup and that year we played against the Montreal Junior Canadiens. And along the way, as you won the West and the East, they could add three players, right? So Montreal Junior Canadiens were stacked. They had Rajon Houle, Bobby Lalonde, Mark Tardif, Mickey Redmond. I could go down the line. And then when they won the East, they picked up Bobby Sheehan, Marcel Dion, and Jimmy Rutherford. Oh, wow. So you know, it's like we had no shot. And they beat us in four games. I remember going down to Montreal to the Forum and walking into the Forum, and our coach, we called him Black Bart. His name was Bob Turner, who was played for the Montreal Canadiens. And I must have, my eyes must have opened like huge when I looked at it and saw the Montreal Forum and 18,000 seats. And he said, hey, Satch, that was my nickname then. They could put a lot of wheat in here, couldn't they? Like, no kidding. No. And so and they beat us four games straight, and I had, I think that's probably what got me drafted, because I had four goals and four assists in four games.
Oh, wow.
And I led our team in scoring. And I wasn't, we had a lot of other guys on the team that were supposed to come ahead of me in the draft. And the draft day, we got together at Molson's Brewery with our coach, because everybody was anticipating that, you know, that about five or six of us were going to get drafted. And they didn't think I was going to be one of them. And then Ron Garwaziak was drafted in the second round, and then it went quiet. And I was the only other draft choice off of the team. And when I talked to Keith Allen later on about it, he said, we asked your coach about you, and he said, Selesky's a diamond in the rough. So he said, wow. I wouldn't pass up on him when awesome. It came
wow.
to the fifth
that's really
round.
Cool.
It's amazing,
so,
yeah. Worked yeah, out well.
Good stuff.
Yeah, you got to take that advice, mm-hmm. right? Diamond in the rough.
Diamond in the rough.
Yeah, like
they're
that.
Still looking for those. They look for those diamonds in the
sure
rough,
they
right?
do. Yeah.
They're nuggets.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right, especially these days.
Yeah. Make up for some draft picks that land up being busts, too, right? I mean, you got to fill some holes. And, I mean, I think some teams do a better job at finding these guys. I think Detroit's done a good job, you know, over the years, maybe finding these guys in Russia and, you know, wherever else they're scouting
Tampa
these guys.
Well.
Tampa's done a hell of a job.
They
finding
do a
some
great
guys.
Job, right? Detroit.
Yeah.
I mean, that team's solid now. They look
yep.
really good.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of years ago, they were like looking up.
Yeah.
yeah
you know?
Big time.
They're finding some of these high end players and drafting them later in draft and them turning out to be elite players, too.
Yep.
Some of these guys.
Well, it takes big guys longer to develop. You know, some of the guys that they draft in those later rounds and those nuggets that they find will be big guys that are still, you know, not as coordinated, underweight because their body is growing, but they haven't grown into their body size-wise. And just developing your skills takes longer and your speed and everything else that goes mm-hmm. with it. So,
that's right.
You know, I get it.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the current game compared to, obviously, a little different animal than when you played, but you enjoying the game?
I'm one of the guys that I love today's game.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at the game, people ask me all the time, what are the big changes in the game? And to me, the biggest changes have been adding a referee and video. When I played, there was one ref. And
it's
the shit
believe,
that
actually.
You did
yes.
away from the puck was what changed the tempo of a game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the intimidation factor was way different. Now, with between videos and two refs, you can't do anything on the ice.
No.
The other big change to me, which was a huge game changer, was eliminating the two-line pass.
Oh, yeah.
That totally opened up the game, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
And change the dynamic of that trap and eliminate all that, because that's what we used to basically play.
Right.
Everybody played the trap.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that you could gain that extra zone, when you look at guys like that take advantage of it, and Morgan Frost does it better than anybody I've seen. I mean, the way he flips those passes, that goal last night against the Rangers on his flip, it's like uncanny how good he is at it. So getting rid of that. And then to me, other changes are, the players are just far more skilled. We never used to develop our skills like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're probably the same as me when we grew up. It was all on your own. You went out and you developed on your own. I didn't have hockey schools. I didn't have anything. Anything I learned until I started junior hockey was all just working on my own and maybe some input from my dad or something like that. But, you know, now their skill level, their training,
yep.
they're finely tuned.
Mm-hmm.
The things that they can do with the puck, the speed of the game
yeah,
is off the charts.
Yeah.
Now, that's, I like all that stuff. What I don't like are these ticky-tack little slashing penalties. And, you know, we used to knock guys' stick out of his hands, and we'd say, hold on to your fucking stick.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, dude.
Exactly. Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What are you doing? You know, but the slashing and some of those obstruction penalties and stuff, I think that kind of takes away from the game a little bit. But overall, I enjoy the heck out of the game.
Yeah.
Enjoy the heck out of watching this Flyers team.
Right yeah, now. No yeah, doubt. They're, so yeah, they're a hell of a team right now.
Yep.
Thoughts? I mean, you grew up obviously playing in the Broad Street Bully era, obviously major physical play. Obviously, the current game, not a whole lot of it. I mean, how do you feel about that? Are you good with it because of the skill level and everything else is kind of in line?
You know, truthfully, I like what I see the Flyers have done.
Yeah.
Because I was never, you know, fighting intimidated me, quite frankly, if you want to know the truth. I was a, you know, I was a chirper and an instigator, and I caused a lot of problems and got things going. But I always had, like, Schultz and Kelly and DuPont were there, and,
yep.
you know, I could stir a lot of shit and get away with it.
Yeah.
But when I look at, when I watch the Flyers model of play, and Florida, you know, yep. and some of these other teams like that, they're banging.
Yeah.
yeah.
They are taking the body. Freddie used to say, get the puck in deep and arrive in ill humor. Oh, and you know what? That's what the Flyers are doing.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at what these guys are doing, getting the puck deep, getting in there, first guy's taking the puck, banging, and trying to create the opportunity and getting on the defenseman hard. So I... Quite frankly, I enjoy the brand of hockey they're playing today.
Yep.
You don't need to fight.
No, I agree.
You know, but the hitting, don't take the hitting out of the game.
No, right, right.
Yeah, I agree. It's probably as close as you're going to get to what like Flyers culture, you know, would be in the current yeah. in the current state of affairs.
Oh yeah.
And then you do have, you know, you have Nick Delorier if you do need some scraps and, you know, someone some toughness.
Even but like Nick Sealer, he's a Seals, good yeah, middleweight.
Hathaway, you got yeah. some guy, but the grit is what you're you know that
Hathaway's to me. A fighter like maybe I was a fighter. He's not really a fighter, but talk about grit. And banging
yeah.
and grinding.
Yep.
He's like a Dornhofer kind of guy, if I look back.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy you want on your team.
Yeah.
And Delorier, you know, I don't think anybody would have wanted to fight him in any era.
No, right?
Dude's just tougher than nails.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. So they got him if they need him.
Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah, they're certainly trending the right way. We talk about this all the time, like from last 2 years to this year, like as far as recapturing that Flyer identity and just the essence of what the Flyers stand for. I think they've kind of found that.
Well, what a job they've done,
mm-hmm.
you know, Danny Briere and coming in and what he paid his dues. He was down in the minors
yeah.
And he learned the game, and he's coming in. And Jonesy is a perfect compliment for him.
I agree.
And Dan Hilford, he's a great leader. He led Blue Cross, and he's leading the right way. He listens to them. And, you know, I think that with Danny and Jonesy, Danny is a GM, so you got to – I give him credit for the courage he has to make the moves that he has. People are critical of things like – you know, could have he got more for Gauthier? Why did he do this? Why did he do that? Guess what? It takes a lot of courage to do what he did.
Yeah.
Right.
Because he felt this value is going to diminish over time. I know what I can get now. I'm making the decision. I give him a lot of credit for that. And,
yep.
And then for the morale, the team spirit that has been built over the last couple of years, I think you got to give some credit back to Danny and Jonesy and Hilferty for that.
Yep.
And then, and Torts. Boy, they've created an environment where they're coming to play every night. I really hope they make the playoffs.
I do too.
I think these kids have earned it. I'll be really disappointed if they don't because they're putting in the effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, they sure are, yeah.
They're fun to watch, man. They really are.
Yeah.
There's no give up in that team. Even when they lose a game by more than one or two goals, like they never stop playing.
That's never right. stop.
And they yeah. never stop.
So. The last two games are indicative of it, yeah. you know? Yeah. They just don't quit.
Yeah. Riley and I were in Boston last weekend for one of our sponsors is Fans of Philly, and we went up for the game, and they were down 3. They almost came back in that game in the third period. They scored some late goals, and you're like, you're on the edge of your seat because they just never quit.
They're not stopping.
Right.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Well, I watched a little bit. What Riley goes to bed early? Is that what you
Does he ever? Yeah, he stayed up that night.
Yeah,
We even waited post-game, saw some of the guys. And,
well, it was my birthday.
It was his birthday
so
as well. Yeah. So he
I had to
go
stay
to
up past 10, you know. Yeah.
Celebrate.
It was funny. He was so hungry. I'm like, you're going to eat this late? Because he's so healthy. He usually doesn't eat too late. And he's like, I'm starving. And we get back to we stop by this a bar with some friends of ours right beside the hotel. And I was like, well, do you want to get to eat? No, I'm going to go to bed. I don't need to eat now.
Yeah,
but he had to get to bed. But we had an early flight, though, also.
Yeah,
but
it was fun.
Anyway, they just, to your point, they don't give up, and they play so hard. Really it's fun hard. To watch.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So it would be interesting how the next 9 games go for them. Obviously, they're in a good spot. Goaltending has been a little bit of a question mark the last few games, but but again, the resilience and the effort and the fight they have is contagious, and they're riding that wave for sure.
Yeah, yeah. These goalies got put in a tough spot.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at Harrison and what he was doing, he was supposed to be backing up Hart. All of a sudden, he's number one.
He's the guy, yeah.
And they have no experience.
That's right.
Coming in at this time of year when guys are, I'm sure you guys see the same thing I do, that the tempo of play, the pace of play is really picked up this time of year. Mm-hmm. The intensity,
sure does,
and the way that people are banging at the nets, and then you know you throw in all the defensemen that got hurt.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's right.
They got kids that haven't been in the league for more than a dozen games.
Yeah,
that are playing significant minutes.
Yeah.
So you put that on top of it, there's going to be breakdowns. In a way, I kind of feel bad for these kids, but I think they're stepping up. And
I agree.
And Harrison can have great nights.
Yeah.
You know what? Last night, those Rangers goals, he doesn't let in bad ones.
Right.
And what's amazing is the Flyers responded.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
Five goals against the Rangers. Because
they would not go away.
Yeah, like that's away. The top goalie in the league this year.
Yeah,
that's right. That's the truth.
Yeah, so. It's not a bad time for these guys to get that experience, though, right? I mean, it's like, what else are you going to do? Is you got to own it and embrace it, and hopefully, you know, they can.
And they're doing it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I'd like to see them just get into a round of playoffs for Lawton.
I mean, this
guy's paid his dues, man.
Yeah.
And he's really playing. He plays hard.
He
he's
does.
Playing real hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell of a goal last night, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did.
Great goal.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with this Bobby Brink, the way he's been playing the last several games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's undersized.
Yeah.
But he looks like he's got strength in his lower body. But the way that his intensity for pursuing the puck and the way that he plays the body when he's going into the corners and still keeps his focus on the puck, he's going in against a lot bigger guys and winning a lot of battles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's got a high level of skill, this kid.
Yeah, he does.
I just, hope he continues finding his way because I think he's a talented kid.
Yeah.
I agree.
For sure. I think for him it's just they obviously believe in him. It's just the consistency thing, and he's kind of like maybe that fringe guy right now, but I think he's developed a ton this year.
Yeah.
I mean, he keeps improving and looking more confident, I think, going into next year. Come back, you know, a little bit more confident, a little bit stronger, and probably earn that full-time roster spot, I would think.
Be good if he did. They've got a lot of good kids in the minors, too,
and
juniors coming up.
Yeah.
It'll be nipping at the heels, which isn't a bad thing for a team.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To have those young guys in the minors pushing you.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I think the future of the Flyers is bright. No question. I think they're back on track to being where they want to be. And it's obviously.
You know what I caution against is that, you know, you hope it's not. I thought the Islanders were going to be way better this year than mm-hmm. they are. They're still not out of it, but what happens to a team? How do they make a good run? You know, I can't put a finger on it because to me, that team, I thought that team would be certainly in a playoff position.
Right, yeah.
I can understand Washington. They're making their last push, but they got a team that's kind of at their peak, I think, is past their peak probably.
Right.
And but I thought the Islanders would be better. The Rangers are a big surprise. That team's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Good. I know.
There's a lot of talent on that team.
Yeah, and Lavi always in his first year, boy, he gets a lot out of his teams. You know, like he is a fun, like I really enjoyed Peter Laviolette.
He's an exciting coach.
He's really good at speeches, but they were never the same. Right. That's what I thought was pretty unique about him. Like he always could switch it up and didn't really get old. He always had little things he did for you guys, and so I can imagine there. You know, in New York.
Yeah.
And they seem to be responding to
They're
him,
responding.
Obviously.
What happens to him, though? It seems like, do players stop responding or do the expectations from the owners get so high that they want to win right now? Because he winds up having a shorter shelf life than I would expect because I agree with you. I think he's a great coach, right. But his shelf life hasn't been that great.
You know what's funny? When he got the job, Homer had to let our good buddy John Stevens ago when he was a coach and Lavi came in. And I remember the first day I met Lavi, he comes in, he goes, well, he goes, this should be a good three and a half years. Cause that's about usually what I last, you know, like right. He was kidding, but it was about exactly 3.5 years. And that's a great question, Bird. Cause I don't really know. Maybe Riley, you played for him.
Yeah. I can't say for sure, but what I will say is that he comes in and he just kind of opens up the gates for all these offensive players to play an offensive game and not worrying about like making mistakes and playing that rigid, like overly structured offensive style game. So he gives these guys the freedom to make plays that maybe other coaches maybe were a little bit more stringent on. So I think like opening that up, these guys have success early. They're scoring more goals. They're feeling the flow, but eventually like that lands up, you know, there's no room after that for growth besides just like what you got. So I think maybe that just like levels off and then, you know, like there's not much more room for growth. But I would say like when he came to the Flyers, like, I mean, I can't tell you how many like ozone drills we did were just like make plays, like just, you know, just like finding different ways to attack the net. And I remember, you know, Danny B and you know, these guys are excited, you know,
right.
Wow, like we can actually like do this the way, you know, be creative, top of the circles in. But eventually like that becomes your style. And then there's nothing like new and exciting anymore because that would be all the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, well, that's true. And the other teams are all watching. They're watching video. So they pick up on the tendencies. And so you learn how to play against guys, except nobody, we were talking about that before we got on the air.
Yeah.
Nobody's learned how to cover Ovechkin up from that side. I don't know what the hell that deal is.
I
mean, you know, he's standing there and he's going to drill it.
Right. I mean, every power play meeting is around like circling number 8.
Yeah.
Like, puck's going through this guy. Like.
A few years ago, when like to your point, they were a little younger and they were every year they were at least in the playoffs, they had a healthy Backstrom. You got TJ Oshie in that slot.
Right.
So if you're overplaying and then you got Johnny Carlson up top who can hammer it.
Right, right.
So I guess you pick your poison there, but like Ovi, I've said this before, Bird. Like where I was on the bench for years is Ovi's side at home when we're at the center, and you just see that. But he's just standing there. He really doesn't move.
He stands
there, and then but when he lets that thing go, you really can't even see it. I mean, it's a perfect angle, but I've said before. I remember Nick Schultz used to slide over, and I'd be like, "Oh, I'd just be praying." Because Schultz, you know, like he's just
fearless.
Putting his face, body right in front of it. I just remember going, oh my God. But this shot, you either heard it hit the net or the glass.
Right.
See a guy laying on the ground because he got hit by the shot. You got to have balls to block that thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think even like going back to like some of the power play meetings I used to sit in because I certainly wasn't on it. But like I sat in all these meetings, it would be like there's sometimes we would like, like obviously cheat to Ovechkin, but then like to your point, there's other options. So you cheat to him, and then it's going to at that time maybe Salmon or Backstrom. And they got some other shooters.
I guess. Backstrom's done, right? I mean,
he was there the other night, but I don't think I definitely think he's done now. Remember, he was hurt last year when we went down to see them. Mm-hmm. He did end up playing a few games, but I think he's done.
Yeah,
he's a talented guy.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was a prick too. He was actually
Was he really?
Yeah, he really was. He was dirty.
Yeah, a little dirty behind the play.
Yeah, behind.
I always thought he was like he looked like an angel out there. Like he was one of these nice, clean hockey players.
I remember we had Belly. Remember we had Belmar here, and no one. He's from France, but he played in Sweden forever, so he speaks Swede. And he said something to back because Backstrom kind of gave him a poke, and then. Belly said something to him in Swede, and he like turned and looked at him, and you know, was like, "What?" And then they started going back and forth, and he goes, "He's a dirty fucker." That's what I told him. Like, but anyway, yeah, it's pretty crazy. But losing him probably didn't help.
No,
you know, obviously
not.
Didn't help. But on their power play. But anyway, I had a question you a minute ago. You're talking about the American League and those guys. Your first year when I think you were in Quebec, I just wondered, I don't know how the game was in junior back then, but like, so you play pro. Billy Clement was on your team. I think he was like the leading scorer. Yep. But you had Hammer, Dave Schultz. He had 382 minutes. Were you just like, what the fuck is going on here? Or was the game kind of like that and there were guys like that in junior hockey? I mean, you're turning pro, you're still a kid.
Well, Schultz played in the East Coast League. And the year that I got drafted, the same year as Schultzy, Keith Allen called us in the last day of training camp, and he said, I got an opportunity for you guys. I want you to go to the East Coast League, to Roanoke. And I said, thanks, Keith, but I'm going back home. I'll just go back to college. And, I wanted to get my law degree, so I said, I'll just go back and quit hockey and go to school. I'll play senior hockey, and if something changes – I'll come back here. But Schultzy went to Roanoke, and that's where – that was a goon league, man. And it was – every night was fight night. And Schultzy went from being, you know, a high scorer in junior to defending himself. And I guess he found out that he was good at fighting. Yeah. And so he came out of that East Coast League, and then we went to Quebec that next year. And he was fighting every night. He had Eddie Bush was our coach back then, and he came into the dressing room one day, and he said, "You guys, you and Selesky, you and Schultz, you're fucking crazy." He says, "You know, every time somebody looks at you, all you want to do is fight him. You think that you got to retaliate." He says, "I kept a black book," and he said, "I wrote down everybody's name, and I just kept I kept tabs on them." He said, "I'm still looking for some of those pricks." but Schultzy was—that's when he started it. He fought everybody.
Yeah,
and there were some tough guys.
No doubt. What's interesting about Schultzy too is you know that he wasn't a fighter before.
No.
He'd never been in a fight off the ice. Yeah. I mean, not probably maybe a junior, probably a handful. But to kind of become the Hammer and essentially the original Broad Street Bully, I guess, right? I mean,
Before he was married, we were back in Saskatchewan. This is before his reputation and all mm-hmm. this. And we were out at a bar one night, and he was with his fiance, and some guys started hitting on her, and Schultzy was just sitting there. And finally, I got up and I said, "Hey, dude, why don't you just take a hike?" But Schultzy, to your point, he'd never been in a fight off the ice. But I'll tell you what, he could throw him on the ice.
Yeah, he could.
All balance. And he was always willing to take a couple punches to get set. That was his whole thing. And, man, he could take a punch like I couldn't believe some of the punches he'd take from guys like Terry O'Reilly that, you know, would have knocked me out. But he'd just take it, get set, and then come back.
Yeah. Guns a-blazing.
Tougher than nails.
Yeah, right? Yeah, no shit. Yeah, it's interesting how, to see someone like that, you think, like, this guy, I've been fighting his whole life, and then to hear, like, you know, talk about, like, owning a role, Whew. And, well, almost creating the role, right? I mean, I guess you could say in some way, shape, or form.
He really did. Yeah. He created. I guess there was like John Ferguson before him and a few guys, but nobody like Schultz. He created. That was an identity he created.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive. Talk about your incident in 1976 there.
What did I do?
I don't know. I think there might have been a little altercation in the penalty box. I don't know. Someone grabbing your stick.
I saw the video.
You know what? There's a few times. One was in 76. That was in Toronto, right?
Yeah, Toronto in the playoffs.
And, you know, there never used to be any glass anywhere. And I was sitting on the in the penalty box. And some guy came by and grabbed my stick and started going off with it. So I went nuts, and there was no glass. I went after the guy. And you know, then a brawl started on the ice. I wasn't even on the ice. And the next thing I know, you know, I'm indicted with Mel Bridgman and Joe Watson and other people. And in all kinds of trouble and charged with assault and all this other kind of stuff. And we kind of eventually, I think the charges got dropped down to something causing a disturbance or something. Yeah. And, you know, then the other one was in Vancouver where we're in a brawl on the ice and some guy reached over and grabbed my hair. And was pulling my hair. And it was right beside our bench. So our whole team jumped into the stands.
Oh.
And then from that one, I got charged with assault. I was the only guy on the team that wasn't in the stands. And then Barry Ashby, Joe Watson, Bob Taylor. And
Chief
Bill Flett. And we had to go to Vancouver and spend like, we were there for a couple weeks in the summer in court for it.
Oh,
and it
really?
Was kind of serious stuff. Eventually they let us off. Bob Taylor had the worst one because in the brawl in the stand, somebody grabbed him by the shoulder and he turned around and hit the guy and nailed him right in the face and it was a cop. So he had the scariest rap of all of them. So, you know, there was just, I blame circumstances. I was always a victim.
Yeah, of course you were. Yeah. Oh, man.
I never did anything.
A little different animal. I guess you got to put the glass up, hey?
Yeah.
Like a good decision.
Can you imagine someone kind of just grabbing your stick, though? Like,
no, I know.
I would have snapped.
Yeah, well anybody insane. Would. And then the guy that grabbed my hair, you know, they had him in court, and he said, I thought he was going to kill this guy.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Yeah. Good defense, right? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. You mentioned you're going back to school or potentially going back to school for a law degree. I mean, you're pretty.
I feel pretty inadequate, by the way.
Yeah.
You're sitting here at Wharton Business School. He's taking courses while you're playing junior hockey. You took courses at Villanova as well, right?
Right, yeah.
And then
never did get a degree, though.
Wharton. No. Though. Yeah, but just. Yeah. I'm afraid my English may be off or something.
Yeah, I know, right?
Smart,
like, mess with you. Yeah, but I mean, obviously you poured a ton of work into business with or without degree, but like you had a successful post-career too. I mean, you talk about that because I think that's pretty inspiring.
Well, you know, when I retired, I was out in Colorado and I had 1 year left on my contract and they wanted me to go be a player coach in Fort Worth, Texas. And I just said to my wife, no, I'm not going to do that. So I said, I'm going to retire after that. I got to figure out what I'm going to do the rest of my life. And so I started looking around for a job. And Ed Snyder knew some folks at Aramark. And he introduced me to them. And I got a job in sales with Aramark. And I guess in retrospect, the best thing that I've ever, my best decision was I stayed with Aramark for close to 19 years and started off in sales and ended up as a an area president.
Yeah.
One of my biggest accomplishments was when I started off in school in sales. I would look at, and I had so much respect for the guy that was president and had the corner office. When I left, that was my office.
No way. That's awesome.
But with Aramark, it was humbling, but it takes the same kind of attributes to be successful in business as, you know, as in sports or in hockey in that case. And, I applied the same kind of, being disciplined, taking responsibility, always having integrity, persevering. Mm-hmm. And when I started with Aramark, I remember I did a training program before I could start sales. I, had to learn something about the business. So they had me go out and I was working a vending route, and I was filling vending machines. And I was at Prudential Fort Washington, and I was filling the machines and paying attention to what I was doing and learning, that aspect of the business. And I hear two guys that are outside, two Prudential employees. One guy says to the other, "See that guy in there? That's Don Selesky. He used to play for the Flyers. That's the only job he can get."
Oh,
so, wow. It's humbling, right?
Yeah.
And then, I worked in cafeterias before I started in sales, and spent time doing everything, working in prep, working washing dishes. So I learned the business from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started in sales, and I had success, and they recognized it and kept getting promotions, and wound up being there for 20 years. Great company.
Yeah.
Can't say. And I loved my time at Aramark. Aramark was a perfect place because it was kind of like the Flyers. It was a great family. We were building a business. We did a lot of great things. We took the company private when I was there, and I was part of the first group that as we went private. And so, that was something that Joe Neubauer, who was the CEO, didn't need to do. So that was very helpful for me. So that's a long time. It's been 50 years. So, from there, I ran a software company called Club Systems Group for a while. It was just a roll-up. So we wound up selling it, and I left that. And then I started a business in healthcare with a friend of mine. I started doing sales and marketing consulting, and I started doing some consulting with him, and he said, "Look, let's grow this business together." So I joined him and the other partner, and we wound up from a real small company having one client here in the Philadelphia area to when we sold the business, we had every hospital in the in the entire Delaware Valley.
Oh, wow.
So we built a successful company. We sold it at a good time right before COVID.
Oh, and, that's good.
And so now I still have a partnership. I have a joint venture with Virtua Health. It's another great organization. I'm blessed in life that I wind up, for whatever reason, aligning myself with great organizations and great companies and good business people. When I look back at success in life and success in hockey, my success in life is the same way. I've never thought that I was anything. I never thought like I did anything that was, I was special, like I had any special talents. But I always believed that I was fortunate enough to be surrounded by good people and work with good people. And just like on the Flyers, we had a great hockey team. We had, Clarkey's leadership, when we had McLeish and Dornhofer and Leach and Barber and, Bernie Perrant, we can go down the list.
Mm-hmm.
Being fortunate enough to be in the right place and be around good people and recognize it. And the same thing was in business.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My success in life has been due to the other people, people I've surrounded myself with. Yeah. And I'm a believer that, you know, if you find good people, you support them, you educate them, and you let them do their job. And you know what? It's always, and keeping an open mind. I always feel that a lot of the times the differences in business, you know, there's different ways that you can accomplish the same goal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times you find that people get so stuck in, this is the way I want to do it, and don't spend the time to sit back and think, and listen to the alternative, and someone else's suggestion, and in that way build up that person, and be respectful of them, and you know either let them do it the way they want to, or if you think your way is the right way, tell them why, and I respect what you're saying, but we're not going to do it that way. Mm-hmm. So you know, other people around you breed success. I follow a mantra, and I'm kind of building thoughts out about it right now. But when I reflect at life, I think that what are the attributes that can lead to success? And to me, everything starts with discipline, and then you know, responsibility follows right behind it. And too many people don't want to accept responsibility. If you're going to do something, if I'm going to be successful, it's really up to me. They blame circumstances. Sure. They do all kinds of things around them. And then in having integrity in what you're doing, what you do and what you say are the same thing, and doing it consistently. And then, you know, perseverance is a big one. You know, you're going to get knocks in life. You're going to fall down, but you got to get up. You got to keep going. You know, you got to keep that discipline that got you there, and you got to persevere through the hard times. And they're not all good times. There's a lot more hard times than there are good times.
That's the truth.
And, you know, we talk about it in sports all the time. Never get too high, never get too low. Keep an even keel and keep yourself focused.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
Yeah, that's great advice. And you mentioned earlier, like when you first got it with the Aramark, you were essentially doing the grunt work, right? I mean, like people talk about discipline and like the perseverance. Like a lot of people just see the success. They see the top of the mountain, right? They don't see like the foundation that you've laid and all that. The ugly work that you have to do, right?
It takes a long time to get there, right? Yeah. It's the same in anything in life. It takes a while. People want a shortcut.
That's it.
And you know, I talk about it when I'm, you know, with business development and when I'm talking to kids that are starting their own business or developing their own business, that there's steps to follow to be successful. And they're very disciplined. And whatever you're doing, and, you know, you take in the sales process, there's a series of steps. And I do some education and teaching on this to folks that are willing to listen. But when we get in trouble is when you shortcut. You can't shortcut the steps.
Yeah.
You miss a step, you wind up wondering, why wasn't I successful? Why didn't I have the outcome? And it's the same with everything in life. There's discipline it's got to be applied in steps and a process to everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree fully. And I think, like, the younger age, you know, the kids these days, yeah, younger generation now, just, like, to your point, it's like everything seems to be, how do we find a shortcut?
Yep.
And, you know, this technology and AI and all these tools, but there's really still no shortcuts.
There's no shortcuts. You still got to apply the same discipline.
You do.
That's why I like torts.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
There's no shortcuts.
No.
Right. That's the truth.
There's no shortcuts with torts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as old school as he is, like, nothing really has changed, right? It's like, there's still the standard of play. This is how we're going to approach the game. And this is my expectation, and anything else is not good enough.
And you know what? Nothing has changed with that, but he's actually tempered his style just a hair with the players, because he realizes that there's a new breed of guys.
Yeah.
But he still has the same expectation. He hasn't changed his expectation.
That's right.
Right.
I really admire that. I'm really hopeful that he can see the continued progress in these guys next year and keep them playing at the same level. Because to me, he's earned it, you know?
Yeah.
And he's earned that the players should respect him. And I think he's got the right kind of guys. He's got, you know, when I look at guys like Konecki, you know, these are their leaders. Sealer.
Yeah.
These are grind guys. These are guys that are hardworking and respect work ethic like that. So. Yeah. Got the right leadership.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I agree. And to your point with Torts, like, the reason why he's still in the NHL coaching is he's been able to evolve emotionally or whatever, you know, because that old school coach of, like, not talking to your players, or the threatening of sending you to the minors, all that stuff, don't work anymore.
Don't work.
You have to communicate.
Yeah.
But you said the expectation, the standard hasn't changed, but you just have to be able to, you know, be able to connect with your players, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing that's really changed, and that's why he's still coaching.
That's why he's still coaching.
Because a lot of those old school guys are no longer around, because that type of coaching doesn't really exist anymore in any sport.
Right? No, that's a dying breed.
Yeah.
You know, you brought up Colorado there last year. Don Cherry was your coach?
Yeah, yeah.
What was that?
He was awesome.
Was he awesome? Was he?
Don Cherry?
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I just wonder how he was, like.
Don Cherry and I never got along.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really? Okay.
No. He's nuts.
What? I'm not shocked.
And, you know, I'd been playing for, you know, Freddie Shiro.
Yeah, right.
Pat Quinn and you know, guys that were respectful players. And you know, Freddie Shiro, he was not a yeller. If he had an issue, he'd bring you into his office, and he'd talk to you about it, and you know, he'd deliver messages, but he'd deliver it to the whole team. You know, I'll talk a little bit about Cherry, but I'll come back after I talk about Shiro. You know, Shiro was the kind of guy that we were playing against Toronto one year in the playoffs, and Toronto, they had a good hockey team. They had Sittler and Lanny McDonald and Borgi Salming and all these guys, and they were up on us, and we were back in Philly, And Freddie would always come out and he'd talk about the lines. The lines were always the same. The starting goaltender was always the same. So he'd come out and he'd talk about that stuff. And he came out after warm-up and put a bucket of water on the table. And he left. And he never came out. And the bell rang. And so, you know, 3 minutes to go on the ice, Clarkie says, well, we better get ready. And Freddie still hadn't come out. You know, at that time, his reputation, Freddie the Frog, was pretty well broadly, you know, known. And so Freddie came out just before we were going on the ice, and he went over. He said to Ricky McLeish, Ricky, come over here. This is about delivering a message to the entire team, not just the one guy.
Right.
And he says, Ricky, roll up your sleeve. He rolled up his sleeve, and he said, stick your hand in that bucket of water. He put his hand in. He says, now pull it out. He pulled it out. He said, see the hole that's left? And Ricky says, Freddie, there ain't no hole there. He said, well, that's how much we'll miss you when you're gone.
Wow. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was one of the best messages I've ever.
Wow.
I mean, it's, and we knew it was to all of us.
Right.
You know what?
Right.
It was not like to any one guy.
Wow.
But that was Freddie's. Freddie was a master.
Jeez.
So then Don Cherry, he was a nut.
That's what I mean,
you see him on TV.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. He makes me laugh when I see this guy's crazy.
And, you know, I had enough of it. I played in the, you know, for good teams and good coaches. And I was on the bench one time. We were playing against somebody, and he was screaming at the guys. And we had a young team in Colorado. Oh. We were bad. We were as bad as they gets. And he was screaming at guys, "You yellow mother," and just relentlessly. This one night, he was going nuts. And I turned around and I said, "Hey, Don." He looked at me. I said, "Why don't you shut the fuck up?" He said, "What?" I said, "You heard me." I said, "Shut up."
Yeah.
And he came flying across the bench.
No way.
And guys got in between us. And then we went into the dressing room. It was near the end of the period. And we went into the dressing room. He came flying across at me. And he stood up to swing. I put up my arm. And then some guys got in between us. And that was the end of our relationship.
No way.
Story. Wow.
Did not expect that.
I didn't expect that. I knew you were going to probably say he was nuts, but yeah. I didn't. Do you wish you would have got one in? Just one?
Oh, ask man. Him.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's
I can see him being completely. Well, you watch him.
That's what
unhinged.
I meant.
Like, he was bonkers.
Yeah, bonkers. Yeah.
He was bonkers.
Just a show. Just a show.
And, you know, he had a team in Boston. That team was tougher than nails. I mean, that team, you know, with the guys they had on that team. And then going to us in Colorado, we had a bunch of kids that. You know, shouldn't have even been in the league at that point. It was a bad hockey team. And he couldn't take it.
Yeah.
He lost it real early.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's wild.
I guess his coaching career probably didn't last much longer than that. And
he was gone at the end of that year.
At the end of the year.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got to be miserable.
I had a couple. I want to ask you about the cups. First of all, you went back to back. Were you like, oh, this is easy? We're gonna win every year. I'm kidding. But
this is the way it goes. It's,
yeah, right. Like, it's crazy.
I'm the catalyst.
But what that first the first Stanley Cup you won against Boston? What stood out to you the most about that team and just the year and winning it?
Well, you know what? I go back to the year before we were playing Minnesota. In the playoffs and we lost in the first round, I think. And I went back home that summer and it was my brother's wedding, I think. And we went to some friends of mine. We were sitting around the table with some of my parents' peers, guys that I admired and grew up with that were hockey coaches of mine. And I said, he said, "You had a pretty good year, Donnie." I said, "Yeah, we did." He said, "What do you think?" I said, "We're going to win the cup next year." They said, "There's no way. You guys aren't going to win the cup." And we really believed it.
Yeah.
We thought we were that good. And, you know, Bernie was amazing. Clarkey was such a leader. And then, you know, when you look at our lines, it was Bill Flett that first year, Clarkey and Barber. Dornhofer, Lonsberry, McLeish, then our third line with me and Kinderchuk and Schultze and Crisp and Kelly. I mean, it's a deep team.
Yeah.
And we had a solid, solid defense.
Right.
A good blend of some young guys and some older guys. So we thought we were going to win. Now, you know, it wasn't easy, but we, you know, knew it was going to be battles. But we had a... Clarkey used to say that his biggest fear was, he never thought about winning. His biggest fear was losing. And we just didn't want to lose.
Right.
And then when we won that game in Boston, we'd never won in Boston before.
That's right.
And then Schultze scores. I mean, that was, that was foretelling.
Yeah.
Schultze scores that goal. Okay.
Yeah.
We're good to go now. It's destiny. Then when we came back to Philly, there was probably 7 minutes left in the game. And I was coming on the ice, and Esposito was changing. And he said to me, "We're not going to score on that guy tonight." Wow. And so we were in their head.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then it all comes together that when it happens, and it's like it takes a while to sink in. It's like, because you dream about it. You watch it when you're a kid growing up. Right. Riley knows that.
Oh, yeah.
You're watching these guys winning the Stanley Cup. Would be like something you would dream about, but can't really dream about because it's not going to ever happen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you win it. It's like, oh, shit. We did it.
Yeah.
We actually won. So it's like, you know, a lot of memories. And Freddie, you know, is win today, we'll walk together forever. Guess what? These guys, we know each other to this day.
Yep.
We know how each other thinks. We have a respect for each other. We don't have to see each other for years, and when we do, it's like we never were apart.
It's
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
There's a lot of teams. When you win, it's like that.
Yeah. That's true. That's funny. You're touching on Freddie a minute ago. I've heard so many cool stories over the years, like, you know, my dad being with the team and just everybody talking about him. But Joe Watson was on with us a few weeks ago, and it was funny when he said he picks up the paper in Boston. You guys are going before game one, and the headlines, what did the headlines say? This team's going to be, our last series will be way harder than this one. And he thinks it's Boston, but he reads it's Freddie Shiro. He says, yeah, I got to get in their head or something to that. He goes, what are you doing? You know, Joe's so animated. The way he said it was pretty funny.
Oh, God, yeah. That's like, you didn't need to get in those guys' heads.
Yeah, <That's> right. Like,
lay low, Freddie.
Yeah, lay low.
Oh, that's awesome. That is crazy.
You know, the funniest was, right before that, near the end of the year, we had a game in Boston, a final game, and you know, everybody was looking at that as a big game, and Freddie played Bobby Taylor. And the reporters asked him why. He says, because it was his turn.
Yeah.
I think I've heard that's awesome.
It's his turn. Oh. He played 5 games all year.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Yeah, so his turn. Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, that's classic. And then the next year you win it again.
Yeah.
I mean, is that feeling carried over? Did you guys think
the feeling
same?
Carried over? Yeah. We got Reggie Leach, you know, right. and Flett was gone, but the same team in place.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie was still Bernie, and you know, I think that we felt confident that we had a shot. Our threat was Montreal. Thank God Buffalo plays Montreal, and they knocked them out. When we were playing, I think we were pretty confident that we'd beat Buffalo when we got to the finals that year.
Yeah.
You know, that was not a, we had their number. We knew how to play them. We knew how to shut down their big line. So,
yeah.
Montreal was a different dynamic. We met them the next year. We didn't have Bernie.
Right.
That's right.
Which is a game changer. Wayne Stevenson's a great goaltender. He's really a good number two, but he wasn't Bernie. And that Montreal team was a powerhouse.
Yeah. Right.
They went on to win several Stanley Cups. Yeah. So, you know, not having Bernie hurt us. And then we had injuries. We had, like, McLeish was hurt. Dorney got hurt. We had a lot of injuries that year, too. So it gets tougher.
Yeah.
You know, once you climb that mountain, it gets tough to stay. And Montreal was coming after us.
Yeah. And, yeah, well, pretty impressive run. Jeez.
Yeah, but it's 50 years. It's too long, man.
It's time to get another one.
We need one in Philadelphia, I'll tell you what. Wait a minute. Dude, I'm 74. We got to get one before I'm gone. I don't know how many good years I got left. I want to see them win a cup.
You look great. I think you got plenty left.
You got these 25
here.
Left.
Oh, yeah, for sure you do. We're going to get one by
then.
Don't say that. We got to get one way before.
We're talking about the years you have left. We'll get one before then. Yeah. Well, I feel like, I mean, I don't know what the process looks like in the next few years, but, I mean, I feel like they're trending towards.
They're moving the right direction.
Yeah, exactly. Which,
and you got to have things fall into place. And you got to not get injuries. And,
that's right.
You know, a lot of stuff has to go into that. Yeah. A lot of luck. Not a good fortune.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
People really don't realize how much of a grind it really is. But then to your point, like, you have to stay healthy. You got to have a few things that work in your
that
favor.
Happen.
For sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's good energy right now in the city. I mean, down the stretch here, I mean, I'd like to see, obviously, the Flyers get in and keep this energy going because it's been a great year all around. I mean, the fans are back, you know, like the energy is back.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
you know, it is. I hope that they can, can get into the playoffs. I really wish them well here the next 8-9 games.
Yeah.
I was talking to Danny on Monday, and I'm like, you guys are grinding, man. It's going to be a push, but hopefully you get in. He's like, I just want these kids to get in and get a taste of this.
Yeah. What a great experience.
You know, that's no doubt what he was
saying.
Well,
you know, forget the taste. Mm-hmm. If they get in, I don't think Florida or the Rangers want to play them in the first round.
Who wants to?
I would not.
You want to play them in the first round?
No, hell no.
The way they're playing?
No.
And they're going to play harder.
Yeah.
That's it.
They will.
They're a dangerous team in that first round.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. You just get in, like, you know, like, anything could happen, right? I mean, my last year in 2010, we make the playoffs, last game of the season, a shootout. And, you know, you have the push, you know, that push we had, right?
That was one of the best. That was one of the best years. I love that.
But, I mean, who knows? I mean, you get in with that type of attitude and resilience. I mean, they're playing a very structured, you know, a high-intensity game. I mean, they're built for the playoffs, so who knows?
I love the way the defense moves in on the play.
Yeah.
And if you notice lately how, you know, they get the puck in deep and how they rotate the puck, and it's almost like there's two guys on the puck all the time deep.
Yeah.
And they're rotating well, and the intensity level's really there. And they're back-checking. They're picking up the off-wings.
Yeah.
The guys in the open, so let's hope they keep doing it all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's harder mentally not to keep yourself up mentally. You got to hope they don't have a drop off against Montreal, because you know it's just. The tendency is
that
you don't let it creep in that you're going to have an easier game, because it ain't going to be easier, is my point.
Right.
That's
going
to
be hard, man.
That's right.
And do they play Ottawa again?
Not Ottawa, but they do play Jersey, Wash, Islanders.
Yeah.
So I think out of the 9 games, 8 of them are teams are lower than them. Yeah, chasing, so Rangers are the only team. So, I mean.
But those aren't easy games. Like you're saying, Bird, they're not easy games.
There's no gimmies man. There's not. No gimmies.
No.
And, you know, these teams are going to, you know, don't like the Flyers. And they're going to, you know, they want to spoil the season, right? I mean, how those games go.
You know, if you're going to make the playoffs, there's nothing better than ruining somebody else's playoff chances.
Right? Yeah.
Which is horrible, right? But it's the truth.
It's the truth.
Knock them out. They got to earn it. You got to earn it.
That's right. Yeah, it'll be a dogfight.
It's going to be a dogfight. Mm-hmm. One other thing I was reading about, too, and I didn't know this. You did color on the radio for like 5 years or so in Van?
Yeah, when I retired.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I liked it. It was good. It was a good transition for me.
Yeah.
I was working with Aramark, so it still kept my name out.
Oh, okay.
And I was, at that point, my sales market was in this area. So it kept my name in front of folks,
okay,
which was really helpful.
Good strategy.
For my transition,
yeah.
And I enjoyed it, but then I was promoted and I got a national sales job where I moved into the arena, stadium, and convention center business. Mm-hmm. So I was traveling nationally, and I just didn't have the time to do it.
Yeah,
okay. But it was fun.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
Kept you in the game too, right?
Yeah, like, kept you close to the game. Cool. It's a great thing in a transition, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never thought of it as a career, but I wasn't that good at it.
You weren't good at it, so you said.
I wasn't that good. I didn't think I was that good at it, you know. It's.
Well, 5 years, you must have been doing all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't fire me.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. You must have been doing okay.
That's right.
I was going to ask you about January 17th. You had a pretty special night. at the Sports Writers Association banquet.
Oh, yeah,
with, yeah. With three generations. Your son's coaching a baseball team. Your grandson played, and they got a big award. You want to talk about that for a sec?
I'll tell you what. That was so cool. We, my grandson, for people that may not be aware, went to the World League Little Series.
Yes.
And they won the Northeast or the Mid-Atlantic region. And going to Williamsport and watching him play in front of 25,000 people.
Crazy.
I said to him, Nate, I've never played in front of a crowd that big. Wow. The biggest crowd I played in was maybe at Montreal Forum, 20,000, 21,000. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I said, how did it feel? And it's amazing how these kids just grew into it. So he was honored at the Philadelphia Sports Writers Banquet as the team of the year, and they were recognizing us for the 50 years since we won the cup. And my son was assistant coach on the team. So we had all three generations, my son, Adam, and my grandson, Nate. And what a great experience that was. We went up to Williamsport for a couple of weeks. And it was like, I had tears in my eyes the whole time.
Yeah, I bet.
It was the most emotional thing. It was more emotional than, truthfully, I mean, winning the cup was the biggest thing that ever happened in my life. But from an emotional perspective, watching my grandson play in the World Series, I get teared up.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was so cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, play, imagine being that age, those kids.
Yeah, that's insane.
They're still babies. Yeah, I mean, really. Like my son's age. Yeah, and that many people. Like,
well, 25,000 people. And when they won the States, they went up to Bridgeton. Bridgeton, Connecticut, where was the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic regionals were, and they went up to a dorm. And so these kids, most of them had never been away from home other than the sleepover. So they were in a dorm up there for 10 days.
Wow.
And then when they won there, they got on a bus and went right to Williamsport for 2 weeks in dorms.
Wow. Jeez.
So they went from being little kids at home to watching them on national TV speaking better than I could.
Right. They're like major leaguers all of a sudden,
Where did these crazy kids
talk
come
about maturing
from?
In what a short
experience.
Amount of time.
I mean, what an experience for a kid to get to do that.
They grew a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
That's really cool. I read that. I thought that was really cool. They're all, three generations.
Yeah,
pretty neat.
Well, Don, we appreciate you hopping on and making the trek over here.
Yep.
So it was fun.
Sharing some insights. Yeah.
Let's make it easy.
Yeah. Trying to have some fun and
let
it flow.
Yeah, yeah.
See if we can get some views.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There you go.
Right? Jack it up.
As long as Don Cherry doesn't watch.
Yeah, I know. We'll make sure we send it or tag him in his little
Twitter
feed.
I kind of wish you would have got one in.
I know. Great
just
story.
Just for hearing that. Geez. No, but that's great. We do appreciate your time. You're awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Big thank you to Big Bird, Don Zaleski.
Good dude.
Yeah, man. Good dude. Great stories.
Don Cherry.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Broad Street Bullies, Stanley Cup champs.
Twice. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yep. So
great guy. Smart man.
Yeah, he is.
Smart man.
Yeah. Nice to see, nice success story on the back end of his career and kind of like learning what he did, using what he learned from his hockey career and applying that to business. And this is essentially the same ingredients as it takes to become a pro hockey player to business. So appreciate him making the trek and stew.
Yep. It was awesome. Yeah. Awesome to have him.
Thanks, Don. Appreciate you. And it is that time.
Now?
Like right now.
Baller? Is it? He gave me a thumbs up.
Oh, yeah.
He's not talking today.
No.
It's time for Clear Room Questions. The Clear Room Questions brought to you by ClearRum.com. Go to ClearRum.com/shop. Put in code NASTY2023 and receive 35% off of your order. PA residents only.
Whew.
It's delish.
What
Baller,
a deal.
What do you got?
What's up, boys? We got a comment over on Instagram from Eric Ingram. He asked, has Scott Laughton been playing some of the best hockey in his career since the trade rumor started this year? He seems like he's making big plays every night.
I'd say so.
Yeah, I would too. He seems to be scoring.
Yeah, scoring. I mean, he always plays with the high. Yeah, that, you know, the high intensity game. He's bringing it. But yeah, I mean, fuck, hell of a goal last night.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. He seems to have turned it to another level. I mean, he always plays again like a high pace, but his scoring, he's just contributing offensively.
He's doing it all.
Yeah, he is.
Our boy Lawrence didn't even have to scare him.
That's right, right? Didn't have to threaten his hockey career to Toronto and
nothing. Since Baller told him he got traded last trade deadline.
Yeah.
No, but he has. That's a great question. He's been playing unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, lights
and
out.
He's a leader, and that's, you know, he's showing why he's a leader.
Yep. Agreed.
We got one from Strawberry Kerr over on Instagram. What are the chances Kolesov gets an opportunity in the postseason?
Man, I don't know the logistics of all of this and how that would work.
I mean, again, yeah, I don't know either. I would like to think he's going to report to Lehigh, get some games.
Yeah.
But going into the playoffs, they're going to carry a third goaltender, right?
Well, for sure.
Aces and you know, you're one loss, one bad game off before he's maybe backing up, and then who knows
how
it goes.
Or an injury. Knock wood. We don't want that.
Right. I mean, to me, there could be a chance. It just all depends on performance, obviously. Team performance, goalie performance, and then injuries, right?
Well, also, you know, we talked about, actually, with Big Bird about one of the things that changes the video. There's probably not a lot of scouting report. Well, there may be these days, but, like, if he comes into the American League and he gets to play some games and he wins, what if he plays unreal? Of course, they're trying to get into the playoffs. They may keep him there to play there, but you just never know. I mean, logistically, again, like, Baller probably knows all that kind of stuff better than we do, but you never know.
You never know.
Crazier things happen.
100%. And the fact that they signed him and he's leaving Russia.
Yes.
Not that there's an exact plan, like, at this moment, but, I mean, you have to have some sort of, like, cushion and net, right?
I mean, again,
going into playoffs, you get one bad bounce and, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, you need a goalie. So I would like to think that's kind of preparing for the worst, or maybe he lights it up and he squeezes himself in there based on performance. You know, I think it's just a matter of time to see how this thing plays out.
I
think the one thing there's a little confusion about, besides the fact of when he's going to come over here, is, like, so you only get 4 call-ups after the deadline, and Cap Friendly says the Flyers have already used 4. Some reporters are saying they've only used 3. But you could kind of make something up, and then
you got a groin injury. You know, I think there's creative ways around these rules. But I think just having him in the system available, I mean, if guys get hurt, you know, like little things, it doesn't have to be, you know, a long term injury to get around some of these things, right? So I think, I mean,
Vegas is finding a way around things.
Teams do. And freaky things happen.
Yeah, I guess that all goes out the window come playoff time, right?
It does.
Yeah.
You're talking about the Black Ace.
Yeah.
We got 9 games left.
For sure. It'll be interesting to see.
It will, yeah.
Devin Petrowski on Instagram wants to know, Nasty, how well do you remember your first game working for the Flyers? What memory from the game stands out the most?
I remember it very well because that was the day I got right in Hitch's grill. I had a few Red Bulls before the game.
Sounds about right.
And we were playing in Mellon Arena. Penguins, the igloo.
Right. Yep.
And Forsberg was the captain. It was that year you got your first games. And I don't know if you remember me telling this story, but I went into the coach's room, and the little coach's room, Terry Murray's in there, Johnny Stevens, Hitch, and I think Reggie Lemelin was on the trip. And I'm like, I came around the corner and I was like, you know how loud I can be. I'm like, all right, coaches, let's go here, you know, and fucking Hitch, he jumps a little
scare
bit.
The shit out
Johnny's
him.
Shaking his head, and Murph's like looking at me. I'm like, you ready to go, Hitch? He goes, Jesus Christ, young Derek, get off that Red Bull.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, you got to be ready, Hitch. And he goes, you got to be calm and collected. That's what you got to do. We lost, I think, 3-0.
Oh, yeah.
That game. And Peter, one thing I do remember about that game, too, is Fopa was an Easton guy, But he used Bauer sticks, and I had to black them out.
Mm.
And the Easton people were not very happy.
Oh, I can imagine.
They were not very happy, but it was still pretty cool. My first game as the head guy with the Flyers, you know, obviously that was a dream of mine. So that's what I remember, quite a few things, but it sucked losing, but it was a great day.
Did you mention to Hitch that it was maybe a combination of Red Bull, Sudafed, and possibly some DD?
I don't think I had any DD on me that day, but you would have probably thought I did. You would have thought I did. When I came around the room real loud, yeah. Like no one was expecting it, all of them kind of jumped and hit. I think Hitch's pen went up in the air.
Oh, I'm sure. Almost had the big one, the heart attack.
Thank God he liked me, yeah. Only because of Johnny Stevens. That was the only reason. Poor Hitch only lasted about 9 games that year, but I got him good that one.
Would have loved to have seen it.
Great question, though.
We got one more. This one's from Showtime Here in 91 over on Instagram. He asks, when is the Phillies tailgate this year?
Oh, cool. Great question, Showtime. Well, let's get on that.
Nice. Lock her down.
Yeah, we had a great time last summer. That was fun.
Yeah, rapidly approaching. I'm not sure exactly, but we got to look at the schedule and get something on the books.
We have to. I love that day.
It was a great day.
It was a great
day. Great weather.
For sure.
Some good peeps.
Yeah, good peeps. Clear rum was there. We'll have everything there.
Oh.
Garage beer. We'll have it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're doing it. We're setting it up.
Oh, yeah. It's on you, Nast.
All right.
Let me know.
I'll do it.
All right. Stay tuned. Great question. And that's a wrap.
Wow.
151 in the books.
151 in the books. Amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks to everyone.
Yep. Been a lot of fun.
Yep.
We're going to regroup here until 152 next week.
Yeah.
And be sure to subscribe, throw out a comment, ask a question, get inside Nasty's head a little.
Yeah.
And until next week for 152, be sure to stay safe and enjoy the week, knuckleheads.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.